Mark, thanks a lot for taking time to talk today.
Thank you, Peter.
Mark, how should people respond to the news that the stock market is pretty much crashing? It's lost about a third of its value from its all-time high of nearly 12,000. It's down around 8,000 at the end of last week.
Yes, and the broader market, the whole market really, is down closer to half. The S&P index, which is broader than the Dow, is down 44.5% from its peak. But then there's other stocks not included in there. So you're talking about half of, lost half of its value since March of 2000. And this is about what we said, actually, at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. We've been telling people for the last 2 years that this was a huge bubble and would lose at least, we were guessing 50 to 60% of its value when the bubble popped.
So you thought that you, from the Center for Economic and Policy Research's Institute, this was something that was predictable. You thought
absolutely
this was going to happen.
Predictable. You just couldn't predict when it would happen. You know, bubbles can go on for years, but they have to break. And that's what people should understand first and foremost, is mm-hmm. that there is real arithmetic here. Stocks are held only for one purpose, because they provide a return, and that return depends on the earnings of the companies. And so this idea that stocks could be, you know, worth whatever people are willing to pay for them was always wrong. And in fact, all bubbles do burst. If the stock prices get so high that, as they have in the past few years, that no one can even imagine a scenario for the economy under which those values could be maintained. That is, in which, you know, no one can imagine a scenario in which enough profits could be produced to justify those values. Then that's a bubble, and that was what we had. And now it's getting close to that popped, and now we're getting close to the historic average value of stocks relative to profits that the companies can earn.
Okay. All the Wall Street analysts, I mean, if people watched the TV news or if they went to their local bank or their investment house, the message was always the same, right? Diversify your holdings, but keep on buying stocks. Why were they being told that?
Some of these people didn't know. Some of these people were making money from commissions. They had an incentive to tell people to invest in stocks. You had a whole mess of analysts that now, you know, have been shown to have been, you know, making money promoting the stocks of companies that, you know, you had big investment, Wall Street investment firms that would promote stocks of companies where they handled the issues, issuing of the stocks, or underwrote the investments, and so they had an incentive to promote the stocks even when they were these companies were heading towards bankruptcy. But I think actually there is a whole, and I wrote about this this week, I think there is a whole set of lawsuits that are waiting to happen, because one thing that haven't happened yet, because these investment advisors, typical investment advisors, were telling employees, mostly low middle income employees, that if they were going to be in there for the long term, they could not lose. That is, they, relative to putting their money in bonds, that they're always going to do better in stocks over the long run. I mean, how many times have you heard that? If you're in it for the long run, you're going to be okay. And that's exactly what is false. In other words, you can't say very much about the short run, because stocks can go all over the place, and bubbles can get huge, and it can overshoot in the other direction too. Like the stocks right now, you could see stocks fall to the point where they become undervalued because of general pessimism. But what you can say is, over the long run, stocks have to have prices that are proportional to their earnings of the underlying companies. And so if you buy into a bubble, as so many people did in the last few years, you are going to lose. You're almost certainly going to lose if you're in it for the long run. So this was bad advice. It was negligent. They should have known better. Besides us, there were at the center, there were other economists, Peter Diamond at MIT, who put the arithmetic out there. He took it, you know, mainly from us. But the arithmetic is not that complicated. It isn't that hard to show that these prices were unsustainable, and that, in fact, anybody buying into the bubble would probably lose.
if
they were in for the long run.
Okay. Well, so then that sort of answers the question of whether it was due to corporate corruption. Apparently it wasn't due to corporate corruption.
Not completely. No, I think most of these people probably believed it. You know, they never looked at the, it was still negligent, but I think most of these people thought for a while that, you know, there were also excuses that people made up. They said, well, stocks can be higher priced relative to earnings now because they're not as risky as they used to be, right? Well, we turned out, obviously, that's not true after what just happened, but people thought that. So, you know, but they didn't really work out the arithmetic.
So,
you know, they didn't really bother to look at the details as we did to say, well, okay, if you believe stocks are a little less risky, are people going to hold stocks for the same return that they can get on a government bond that has almost no risk at all? And they didn't look at that, and so they were negligent as much as, and of course the ones at the top were corrupt as well.
Right, so to say that the stock market crash is being caused by the executives at WorldCom or the executives at any of the corporations that are being exposed to have accounting, you know, have broken the law with their accounting practices, that's not really accurate then.
No, that was a trigger. You know, so anything could have triggered it. You know, the scandal had a huge effect in triggering the crash, but it had to happen. And in some sense, we're lucky it's happened now instead of letting it get huge, you know, bigger. You know, Japan had a much bigger bubble in 1989. The Nikkei index was at 39,000, and now 12, 13 years later, it's at 11,000.
So it's down around a third, less than almost a quarter of where it was initially.
That's right.
So that'd be
right.
Like,
and that's 12 years later.
So that'd be like expecting the Dow Jones to end up down around 3,000 instead of around 8,000.
So you see, bubbles can get huge, but they have to burst, because in the long run, there's no reason for investors to hold stocks other than the returns, the profits that the companies can provide.
Okay. So as people are really watching this happen, almost, you know, in shock, seeing these, what used to be huge numbers, dropping down into, I guess, what are more reasonable numbers, should we consider this a good thing?
Well, it is. I mean, the sad part, of course, is all the people who have retirement savings in there, and they're going to be in trouble. About half the population doesn't have anything in stocks at all, even in retirement funds. And of the other half, it's pretty concentrated, so most of the half that do don't have that much. The median's probably around 20, 25,000. So it's usually their house that is the major investment that they have. But nonetheless, that still leaves many millions of people who had their large part of their retirement income in stocks and have lost a big part of that. But in terms of what it's, and that's very sad, and that's, you know, we should really make sure that doesn't happen again by holding our politicians and corporate executives accountable in the future. The politicians, of course, have to get a lot of the blame, both parties, for just riding this bubble in the 90s and not saying anything about it.
And in fact, encouraging it by decreasing regulation and...
Yeah, absolutely. And pretending that this rising market was a sign of a successful economy, which it wasn't, although it did help fuel the expansion. It was a bubble. A huge part of the investment was wasted. But in terms of what the world is going to look like, I think it's going to be a much better world. I think we're going to see a change in attitudes. People are no longer going to see themselves as owners. So many people who think that, you know, if a corporation lays off 300,000 people and that's good for the stock price, well, then that's good for them and for the world. They're going to look at themselves more like they did in the 50s and 60s and 70s when you had, very strong wage growth in the United States for the typical worker. And that is how people saw themselves as advancing, as employees through their wages and benefits, as citizens through such programs as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and, of course, someday we'll have health insurance for everyone like the rest of the world. This is how people are going to look at the world again, now that these illusions that anyone can get rich quick by just making the right investments, now that these are being shattered, people are going to realize that, you know, the way they can advance is by everybody advancing. And you know, the whole idea that the stock market is vitally important to the economy, that's going to disappear as well. I think, you know, this is promoted by the business press, but the stock market isn't that important. It's going to have an impact now because, you know, $7 or $8 trillion of wealth has just disappeared, and so that's going to depress consumption, and it's going to be a little bit harder for businesses to raise capital. But really, the stock market is not that big of a source of capital of financing anyway, and it's never been that important in our economy. And, of course, prior to the 20 or 25 years ago, hardly anybody, ordinary people, didn't own stocks. And so we're not going to go back to that world completely, but we're going to go back, I think, to something that is much more in touch with reality in terms of what matters to the economy and what matters to the vast majority of people, and it's not going to be the stock market.
Okay, one thing that should matter to most people because it is a safety net for them is Social Security. Can you just comment on what would have happened if any of those plans to invest our Social Security funds in the stock market had actually
come
true?
Yes, we're doing a paper about that in the next week or so, and people can find it on cepr.net, and of course any of the things that I'm talking about here, but yeah, it would have been a total disaster. Look at how much they would have lost. I mean, people would have been, you know, they would have lost a big chunk of their retirement income. Well, there would have been cuts in Social Security, which is what would have happened. But I think that issue is going to be pushed aside for a while. It'll never go away completely because you have a huge Wall Street constituency, huge money-wise, not a lot of people, but a lot of money behind it. But for now, I think it's dead. You know, it's kind of ironic, too, because if you were going to invest in the stock market, now would be a better time than when they were advocating the privatization. In other words, if they had privatized 2 years ago or 3 years ago or even 4 years ago, that would have been a much bigger disaster than if they were to partially privatize today. But, of course, it doesn't work that way. Now everybody can see how risky the stock market really is.
Right. How about you're there in Washington, D.C., and people are trying to point the finger, you know, at either the Democrats or the Republicans for what's happening with the stock market and what happened with the stock market. Do you see that one party or the other is more responsible, or did they both contribute equally to this?
Yes, I have to say it's both equal. I mean, you know, the Clinton administration supported this bubble and wrote it throughout the 90s and never said anything or warned anyone, and they could have. You know, Alan Greenspan made his famous speech in 96 where he said that the stocks were overvalued, and he was right. That's why we're going back to those values right now. It was December of 96, but then he backed off. So it was a bipartisan. Republicans, of course, did the same. They didn't bother to warn anyone. In fact, encouraged it. And of course, they both encouraged the accounting abuses by, pushing against or just preventing any kind of the basic reforms that would be needed to prevent them at the Securities and Exchange Commission, for example. So I think it's pretty much bipartisan. I don't really see one party as having a bigger role.
That doesn't leave voters much choice when it comes to looking for a solution for something
like
this.
Although, I mean, I think the Democrats are right to say that the Bush administration is more resistant to reform than they are right now.
Okay.
There's some significant differences there.
Okay. Mark, what should people be doing right now? I mean, both if they've got money that they want to invest, if they're looking toward their retirement, but also if they feel like they deserve money from a class action lawsuit, are there organizations that they should look to?
Well, I don't know about organizations that would take up that cause, but there are lawyers that could make a lot of money from it if they were to go after these big investment firms that were telling people to, you know, throughout the bubble the last few years that they could not lose over the long term.
Right.
I think those they could go to find the people who've taken on the look at all those lawyers who took on the tobacco lawsuits and the big class action suits. Those people can do that. In terms of investments, I don't like to give investment advice because things are unpredictable. I would say bonds are a better investment than the market right now. It's quite volatile. But you know, the stocks are getting down close to that the average level of their historic value relative to earnings. So people going in for the long term now are not taking anywhere near as much risk as they would have a couple of years ago.
Okay, Mark, was there anything else you wanted to throw in here right at the end?
No, I think we pretty much covered. I guess the only other thing I would say is that this post-bubble economy is going to be good for the rest of the world as well. I think, you know, there's been enormous pressure on Europe, and the press, of course, keeps up a steady drumbeat on this, you know, to become more like America, to get rid of the social protections that they have and to lower wages and benefits and all those things. And I think that will ease now as well. People will see that the American kind of neoliberal system that we've had in the last 5-10 years was a lot of it, the success of that was an illusion and was a bubble. And I think, of course, the rest of the Latin America and Asia, I think the credibility of the whole Washington consensus in the low and middle income countries will also be eroded, and people will choose more rational and reasonable reform path towards development and growth in the rest of the world.
Okay, so the silver lining might be there for the rest of the world.
Absolutely.
Too. All right, Mark Weisbrot, thanks very much for your time today. Really appreciate your
Thank
doing
you,
this.
Peter.